welcome. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. Tonight we have another great show dealing with metaphysics and spirituality and science and some issues tonight about political matters and thoughts about what life in an enlightened future country could be like right here on Earth. So we've dealt with this subject at times. We've talked about what is a future enlightened world to some extent. But I'm just talking about tonight the trappings of a future country. Doesn't have to be the country I'm speaking from, which is the United States, although there are some ideas that you might find a bit familiar if you're familiar with the United States. However, you may also find it a bit foreign. So it's sort of a mixed bag in that context. I wanted to start off by, first of all, defining what I mean by an enlightened future country. Something is enlightened when it is expressing predominantly spiritual thought or God's thought, and instead of the form part of it taking in energy, it is usually giving off energy, and in some respects, we call or refer to this kind of energy as light. Light is really God's thought, and especially when it's in form, which is where we exist at the present time, things usually have to have a relationship to form. We call it virtuous. So an enlightened future country would be a virtuous future country, especially as it applies to the nature or form of the things within the country. Very interesting. I find that to be, in some respects, kind of liberating, because when we most of our lives think of our life, we usually think of a life as a life of, we'll say, some stress and work and toil, etc. And very few people think of their life as an enlightened experience. Some people aim for that or try to make it so. Imagine a whole country in which most people's lives, for most of the time, have an enlightened life to them. Wow. That would be big, huh? And I'm going to describe some of the things I think have to do with making such a place actually exist. Now, the time is coming for this sort of thing to become possible. It also is coming for the darkness around us to destroy that possibility, possibly forever here on Earth. So we're in a big challenge. Some people say, well, next year, 2012, you know, with all the prophecies, etc., could be the time when everything falls apart. I really think it's a time more of choice and a movement in a specific direction one way or another than it is a finality of anything. Even if you believe in the Mayan calendar, that's really just a change, supposedly, according to the Mayan tradition, in a way of life. That's what it is. It's the fifth, they call it the fifth world of life, comes to an end of sorts, and a new kind of world of life takes over. That's in their tradition. Now, if you don't want to go into that side of the equation, you can look at it from the standpoint of what I usually do look at it as, which is a change in a major ray focus, which is the throat chakra or third ray energy, losing focus on Earth, meaning that it is not going to develop as easily or readily in people, especially when they're selfish. And in place of that will be the fourth ray or sacral center energy, which has to do with balance between spirit and energy. Right now, we are very imbalanced. A lot more energy in people's lives than the thought of God or spirit to have an effect on that energy, hopefully then to make it more virtuous and enlightened. So we're living in a relatively unenlightened time, relatively, in comparison to maybe 20 or 30 years from now, we would hope. However, because there's resistance to change, particularly when these big changes in ray focus take place, it's possible things can go really dramatically downhill, and that would not be a good outcome. And hopefully tonight's show will help people to find, let's say, some hope and promise that it doesn't have to go that way, at least in our enlightened future country. And the aspect of a future single country doing this is probably a misnomer, because truly if a country reaches the levels that I'm going to be talking about this evening, others will be following them, and or most of the world may actually move more in that direction. So it's hard to single out and say, well, just with one country is going to be so enlightened. But nonetheless, this is more of an example than it is a likely possibility of taking place, because it's much more likely that a number of countries would tend to move towards enlightenment rather than just a single one. Nonetheless, for the sake of discussion and example, we'll talk about it in that framework for this evening. Now, okay, let's start off with some of the ideas that are needed to produce such a enlightened place, because it isn't easy to go from where we are today to this other place, because we have an excess of the third ray having been around for 675 years and focused on, and a kind of frenetic lifestyle which it produces, and a lack of balance between spirit and energy, or form and spirit. And the thing about this is that the energy is dominating in the world around us, because the third ray represents, in its rawest form, energy. It's the third part of God's mind. It has to do with how intelligent activity converts back and forth between itself and energy. And unfortunately, there has been a tremendous amount of unintelligent activity progressively, as time has gone on, producing a great deal of energy outcomes, overwhelming the spiritual side of life and making the world a kind of hostile environment for spirit to exist in. Some of you can identify with this, I'm sure. So, okay, that's what's been happening, but okay, we're having this change come about in the next year or so, year and a half maybe. And it's going to dramatically alter this whole past that we have been living through and are familiar with. Imagine then, if we might, a country. It doesn't have to be a country that actually exists today. It would be probably better to talk about it as an abstract extension rather than any specific country and then trying to modify or change it into something other than what it was or is. In the United States, there are dramatic, we'll say, changes coming. And these changes may lead towards enlightened future life if we so create ourselves and the country into that part of existence. All right. So to begin with, I think we'll start with the political system. And these are my thoughts on this. The problems today in what I would call politics is that it is a dishonest profession. It lacks both nobility and truth. And it has in its characterological components a need or desire, I should say desire, for power and control over others, and the seeking of enrichment at the expense of others. the dominance and the abuse of those that are supposedly not in the political majority, and even worse, for those who are not even close to being in the kind of power control that those in the majority and control presently have. They may not be in the majority. They may be just some kind of group of despots. But nonetheless, this is the present political dilemma that we face with. And the answer to this dilemma is sort of a modified Republican or Republic democracy. I don't want to use the word Republican because people confuse it with the party, the Republicans. But we say a democracy that has republic in it. A republic is a representative democracy where most of the time people do not vote and do not make choices, do not have decisions to be made in specific elements of how a country creates its laws and exercises the necessary means of providing services, etc., to its citizens. And sometimes that includes security and protection, etc. Now, we are kind of at the peak of an attempt to restrict government, because government is the antithesis of freedom in nearly all of the past of our planet. So if you have a government, you're usually swallowing up the freedom of others, usually for the benefit of those who run the government. And this is a bad outcome, has been for a long time. In an enlightened future country, I propose the following, that the concept of a republic be continued but modified. And I've suggested this in the past. Some of you may recall it. You've heard it in my earlier shows. And that is that up to, say, 70%, it resembles a republic because you have representatives who are elected, and those elected representatives, they vote on what is best based upon the different views that they have and the ideas that they come up with and the commonality in ideas as well. So it's still a voting system, one person, one vote, in terms of things like legislation. However, the big difference, the really large difference, is that in this new modified republic I'm discussing, if, say, and we can use any number you would like, but let's say 70% of the population wants to vote on it themselves directly, whatever there is to be decided upon, a bill or a whatever the vote would be about. And 70% of the people want to do that themselves. It would automatically switch to a individual representative democracy because of the ability these days to vote directly on things over computers and the internet, etc., and with relatively high security factors. As even I speak, they're working on better and better security systems. So you couldn't just use manipulative hacking methods to try to change the outcome of an election or what people may or may not want. So that, and that's technologically feasible, even as we speak, but it will become more so in the coming years. So here we have now, if 70% of people say, hey, you know, we don't really want our representative or representatives being the final word here in voting, We are taking back the right to vote on a one-person, one-vote system, and until further notice, the republic is gone, and we have a pure democracy. there's inefficiencies in this, and also a lack sometimes of understanding in how and in what ways it's best to facilitate all of the wealth facilities and other things that are running around, and people are tending to take it for granted. So we have that single issue now changing pretty dramatically what we call the legislative and the ruling issues of the country. Now, would there still be a president? Yes, most likely there would be a president and maybe a vice president, very similar to what we have today. However, the likelihood that there will be an even number for and against something is much smaller. And there is a more definitive, more specific expression of what we'll call the, I'm not even sure what to call it, the parts of this system where people want to be in control and want to do things on their own and are distrustful, possibly, of their representatives and are seeking an outcome that may be more spiritual than not, and do not like the choices and arguments that have been proposed prior to any vote by the representatives. So the representatives are just being superseded by the people. And they would need somewhere around a 70% vote to do that, which is a lot. So a lot of times the representatives will function like a republic. This does a number of things, and the first is that it really limits the ability for the government to function in a way that ignores the will of the people. It will reduce corruption. It has a, we'll say, a sobering effect on people who want to make a career out of politics. It does a lot of things, and those are all good, in my opinion. Are there any downsides to it? Yeah, probably a few. You could have a situation in which you can't get enough people, a quorum of people voting on the Internet, and that would be necessary in order to reach a change. So in other words, if you only have 20 people voting, because it's a really unlawful, awful kind of bill that they're looking at or law that they're looking at, then you don't really, that isn't a good democracy because most of the people aren't involved in the process. Now you can say, well, but they're choosing to do that. Well, I agree they're choosing to do that, but it's a very bad system that can become self-destructive quickly. So you don't want that outcome. And there are ways to avoid it. In that if you start having a lot of votes, very small numbers of the population involved in it, even though it's 70%, then at that particular point, you would want to probably suspend the system and go back to the republic for a while, because you would have virtually a micro-minority rule, which is just as bad as having singular majority rule over all the rights and privileges of minorities. So there would need to be some safeguards built in so that under the unusual circumstances as I just described, the world would still be a good working model in place and people would not be reduced in their ability to live because the system itself isn't providing a good enough method for them to do that. So as a political system, this is really, I think, a very kind system that allows people to be active and creative, doesn't punish people who are not, and allows people to exercise a lot of freedom in their life. Very good thing. Okay, what are some of the other elements, then, of this political system in this society that I'm trying to draw upon? And another element would be the court system. We need to have more equity in the courts besides law. and if you don't understand the difference, somebody try to give it to you. It might be lawful for people to evict someone, let's say. But that person, let's say that person is being evicted because someone else is willing to pay more for the same house or apartment. That's capitalism, right? And they go to a court of law, and they have some kind of lease or whatever, and just says when their lease is up, you get thrown out. Well, it sounds well and good. But if it was a law, a court as well of equity, the argument would be, well, my lease said, yeah, that I'm out. So, but I've contributed 35-40% more to the apartment, and in terms of painting, I put new carpeting, and I do all these nice things to the place, and now I'm being evicted because, well, maybe my landlord doesn't like me too much. Well, in a court of equity, there would be some kind of benefit or return for even acts of completely separated and voluntary changes, such as, well, I put the carpeting in, nobody even knew about it. And, of course, the landlord might say, well, I didn't have anything to do with that. But then again, if they're able to lease the place for more money than they used to, the carpeting does have some effect. So in an equity situation, you look for what people do to each other to hurt and or benefit each other, and to see who comes out in a way in which they aren't being taken advantage of, and they may be even giving to others who are literally taking from them, even though the law is on the taker's side. And so you say, well, the law under law and under truth is on that side, but under equity it's not in favor of it. So equity would be a major part of the system in my thought process. It changes law to become a little bit more like arbitration, but even more so than that, it has to do with the aspect that when someone is loving and giving, they shouldn't be punished for that. They shouldn't necessarily be rewarded either. The question becomes whether they are being punished, even if they're not being rewarded. And so you get into all kinds of relativistic ideas. These courts used to exist up to in the United States. They were there until nearly the end of the 19th century. So, and then they just vanished, mostly because people said that they needed security in knowing how and why they're making an agreement with somebody, and that everybody's going to be treated pretty much the same. Well, the problem when you treat everybody pretty much the same in a court system, which is called a court of law, is that you may achieve a legal outcome that has with it a precise and accurate, clearly defined, consistent outcome, but it consistently has an unjust element to it in that it is inequitable. And this is where you want to have both balancing each other out. I look at it as the justice more like the first part of God's mind, and the equity being somewhat based more on the second part. Although those are not clear examples, and there may be no clear examples, but I still see there is a considerable difference. Why would we want more equity in our courts? Well, it cuts down on corruption. You might say, well, wait a second. How could it cut down on corruption? Because when you got people supposedly only making decisions based upon law, that seems much more accurate and cut and dried than if they're doing it based upon equity. And the interesting thing about that is that the law is easily manipulated to the benefit of the person in control, be it a judge, magistrate, or jury. And so you don't have what most people think they have by having this system of law only. I like the idea of having some loss and also some ability to adjust the outcome of those laws so that the outcomes, all we attempt to always have the outcomes become as much as possible equitable. So there's a very different way of looking at the legal system. Now, what you might say, okay, well, that's very interesting. What other things then would have happened in a political system that would be different? Well, the other thing is that I would certainly make it that any law would be evaluated by an independent or separate elected group of people on the measures of how virtuous it is. How much does it create more of God's thought in life itself? And how much does it give people freedom to be creative while at the same time being loving and helping to grow God as much as possible within themselves and others, and to become more an expression of the real spirituality? This is fascinating if you think about it, because what I'm suggesting here is that, God is now the fundamental aspect to life if we're going to make a system that has God is part of the system. Some of you are going to say, well, what about the separation of state and, you know, grand religion? I'm not really talking that much about religion. I'm talking about God, but a lot of people are atheists, and not a huge number in the United States, but still. And they have a right to be heard and to be understood and to not have to be forced into a viewpoint other than that. And so, to me, the system is best that functions the least in terms of affecting people, not the most, and that is open to the idea that there is truly creative freedom and people should have the right to live their lives fairly unencumbered by the government that does the basic things that governments are supposed to do. And so in our enlightened future country, one of the changes, we'll say, another change, I should say, is that people have a great deal more freedom and they have the right to disagree at greater levels, even with the rules and laws that the society chooses to adopt. Many, many more loopholes are allowed to exist with people doing alternative lifestyles, than the ones that the majority choose, without there being conflict and restriction. This can be achieved by having a system of, we'll say, various agencies that are kind of like anti-agencies. What they do is they ensure that the rule-making agencies are limited continually and actually shrunk on a regular basis to prevent them from interfering with the rights of the inhabitants, but still able to do some of the small things they might do to make life more attractive and more friendly, more loving, etc., for the population. And that education continues abundantly, but in a free atmosphere where people are free to learn things that maybe others don't agree with. A very interesting plan could be hatched just on what I've said so far. And you can start seeing here that this country we're talking about does vary quite a bit from what I would consider to be the average United States place to live today. Some people might say, yeah, what about Texas? Texas is doing great with their economy and they have more freedom and life. Well, yes, but Texas is still encumbered, if you want to say so, by the lack of freedom in many other states and by their inability to function as a country. They can function as a state within a country, which is what they are, but to function as a country, they don't have the level of autonomy, and they don't have the ability to make their own separate constitution. They can have a state constitution, but it can't conflict in any way with the U.S., or the U.S. Comes in and trumps it out, and it'll soon disappear. if we're going to make this system, this new kind of political system, work to become the true enlightened future country, it's got to have agencies that are counter agencies to agencies. It's got to be looking for ways to, we'll say, make the country continually increase in its freedom for its citizens. Freedom in thought, freedom in expression and creation, freedom of movement, freedom in every possible way that freedom can be manifested. And freedom to think, of course, express oneself. Some of these things are available, at least in part, in the United States. But I'm suggesting that that's just the very basics, and it goes much deeper than what we might find in the U.S. And then you might say, well, okay, well, what about all those founders that people don't care about anymore, and where they write about in the Federalist Papers and this and that? Well, yeah, I think that we have many expressions of philosophies in the U.S. and in my enlightened future country. These expressions of ideas and thoughts would be openly expressed, and many people could find out about them almost instantly because there'll be a lot of electronic access using the good parts of the Third Ray in terms of its focus on technology. There still has to be this balance, though, of spirituality to materiality. And that's one of the things where we move into kind of another play on the system, where on a big scale becomes, again, the Third Way expressing itself in the economy. But now the economy has to balance itself with being beautiful and helping the people's senses remain intact longer and longer and more accurately. That's a sense of beauty. And that, for that to take place, there has to be a big shift in the world, and if we're using the United States as a model, in the U.S. as well. What kind of shift? Well, people have to think of their fellow citizens as being as important or more so than they are. That's tough. They also need to look towards the future and seek ways that they can grow their consciousness and others can grow their consciousness to make for a better world through more of God's thought and mind coming through in their daily interactions and eventually in their co-creations. And speaking of creation, it will become a prominent feature in people's lives. Right now, it's almost like a subheading, or sometimes it doesn't even have a statement in the person's life. This idea of being a creator is so critical because you can't really become more of your own creator unless you yourself are being a co-creator with it. And, of course, many people are not these days. So, in the future country, people have, as a natural right and also an encouragement by the government and by other people, to be as creative as possible and to try new things that may fail at without great punishment. One of the things I would suggest would be basically creativity awards, where people are given opportunities to be rewarded just for the sake that they were creative, even if the outcome in the long run wasn't as productive as others might have liked, or even they might have. So what I'm saying here is that creativity is almost a commodity rather than some kind of privileged right you're trying to get for yourself. And that is a huge change from the way things are right now. Right now, it becomes more and more difficult to be creative because so much resistance is in the air and around us in expressing anything that's significantly different from the run-of-the-mill. This is unfortunate because it means that we're going darker because you can't become enlightened if you are cutting out creativity and the freedom to be creative. So that's a really tough problem. Some people, of course, get around it by just plugging forward and being more creative. Others try to pawn off a sense of you know, I'm being creative because I did this or that. But they're really not doing much of anything. They are trying to get accolades from others for what are de minimis levels of creativity, pretty much on a very infrequent basis. So this is going to be changed by the emphasis of the nature of the country rewarding people who are being creative, just for the sake of their creativity, if nothing else. And yes, if they actually make something that's really helpful, there'll be other rewards as well, maybe some of them in a material sense. So when we look at how our enlightened future country is going to be, right off the bat, it's starting to look considerably different from anything I am presently aware of. I'm not trying to make something that just looks different. It just so happens that when you start to talk about these things that seem pretty important, if you were to really adopt them in any significant level, you'd have a pretty different place than anything people have experienced to date. That may be a good thing. I hope it is. Hopefully it's not a bad thing. So there's a definite change. This is like a big shift from where we have been. Now, what would happen then to people's, work ethic and working and ownership and trying to find ways of being individuals, say? What about all that? And the answer for it is pretty clear, as far as at least I'm concerned, and that is that individuality is not harmed by being more creative, by exercising greater levels of freedom in those who are making great decisions about us collectively, and preventing that from happening if there's enough of a pushback to prevent it, because in general terms there's a lack of consensus among the people. It might be among the representatives, but not among the people. So we've got a really different kind of place emerging here. Let's move into the area of education. I just start touching on it, and then we'll take a break here. But in education, there would be a totally different paradigm as far as I'm concerned. Now, I've talked about this one before. And that is, I really see the model of education as being one of, again, creatively coming up with new understandings, new ideas that are then applied to some real-world, quote-unquote, physical-world problems, and also some that are completely abstract but challenge the present systems in every way. And I'm talking about everything from social science to physics to chemistry to all kinds of different mathematical models, astronomy, etc. So what we're talking about here is that there's going to be a change in the way we learn things. History will be taught in terms of what worked and what didn't work and why, and how changing from a prior position in history to a new one, what that will look like in terms of how the world around us would change. That kind of thing is very practical, by the way. I don't know anybody who teaches history like that these days, but strangely, when I went to school, I actually was taught a system like that, because one of my degrees is even in education, and I'm a teacher, so I could logically actually say that part of my training was specifically in that area, because at that particular time, that's what the emphasis was for a very short window at the particular school I went to, which had a unusually large and fairly progressive, I don't like the word progressive, but we'll say advanced teaching college within the university. And I just sort of decided, among other things, I'd pick up a degree as a teacher, nothing else. I got on stage. So I did do that. But that isn't the emphasis of my life. And now I am a teacher, but in ways that really you couldn't go to school to learn how to do anyway. So it's kind of a different thing. Well, listen, we're running out of time here for this segment. We will get through all these defining things, because I want to get to some of the actual interactional aspects of life in this country. But I want to build up why the country is the way I'm suggesting. And I hope you're finding this to be of interest. We'll be back in about 2.5 minutes from right now.
Hun, what book are you reading?
It's a novel, kind of, about romance, love, and spiritual life in general.
Kind of a novel? What do you mean?
Well, it's based on some real-life experiences and even real characters. Some of their experiences are fascinating and remarkable. I can't put this book down.
How come the title is Afterlife Love?
That's part of the fascination. This book describes the afterlife in intricate detail and even explains why things are the way they're explained.
But how can anyone write about or know that?
Some of the characters travel out of body to some places that people who've already died also go to. I'm finding it completely believable because it all makes sense and fits into a bigger picture for me.
Hun, what happens to these people?
You can read it for yourself when I'm done if you want.
Better yet, I'll get my own copy so we can discuss it while we read. Let me see. I'll write down the title. It's Afterlife Love by Niles McFlower. MacFlouer.
Afterlife Love is available in some bookstores and from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com or 480-966-3132. That's 480-966-3132.
Hi, everyone. Since childhood, I've had questions about my life and life in general that I couldn't find adequate answers to. Questions like, why am I here? Why are others here? Does the universe have a purpose? And how does that relate to my life? More recently, I've been wondering what happens when we die, especially the reasons why. I'm more of a doubter than a believer in many things, and answers that include the whys allow me to think and figure out the truth for myself. I've been reading a book, Life's Hidden Meaning. This one book contains more answers, including the whys, than all other sources I've read or heard. It's amazing to me that every one of my questions has been thoroughly answered. More importantly, I have found that all of these answers so far have checked out to be true. I hope this message helps some of you in your quest for better understanding. The name of this wonderful book is, again, Life's Hidden Meaning by metaphysician Niles McFlower. Some bookstores sell it. I got my copy directly from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com. Life's Hidden Meaning may enlighten your mind and bring some peace and joy to your heart.
We're back. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. Tonight we're talking about life in an enlightened future country. I just thought it would be kind of interesting to, hypothesize, postulate, and suggest that what that life could be like if it was truly an enlightened country here on Earth. Now, this is related to our planet. Things could be considerably different in a different world, so we have to make it somewhat related to what we're familiar with. Okay, so back to our future country. So what would it be like then to, since there's going to be a lot better balance between spirit and energy in general, then is material form as cherished and as important? And here's going to be where the big difference lies. Material things will still exist. However, they will be mitigated more strongly by the fourth ray coming in and the third ray going out. All that means, you don't have to know what that means, really, but I'll give you the bottom line. The bottom line is things will be much more beautiful, or they will be ignored, discarded, or destroyed, because people will seek beauty above size and material amounts. Beauty will become a more treasured part of existence. And that should be coming up very soon because of this change in the race structure. But in this particular country, this has already occurred now because this is the future country. And so people, when they say are seeking to have things, and of course they're going to still want some things while they're physically alive, those things will be valued based upon their level of beauty, and by beauty I mean how much they improve the overall senses of those who experience them. Beauty in itself is, by definition, is the ability through enlightened energy to improve the senses of those that experience it and make them more sensible and more able to sense. A very interesting idea. So it'll be a beautiful country, to say the least, because that's going to be one of the primary methods that people evaluate the forms are in. We do not do that for the most part these days. Now, some people say, oh, I like prettier this or that, clothes, cars, whatever. Yeah, but the issue is that the what people call beauty is not about whether it improves the sense. They just think it looks neat or it has some interesting pattern or design to it. That's not the beauty I'm referring to. That's a kind of, we'll say, common language beauty, but not necessarily true definitive of beauty. And so beauty, it becomes the way that people evaluate the worthiness of the forms that they're in, including their own bodies, but way beyond that. That changes the world's perspective significantly. And so it rebalances again the spiritual part of life to the material side, which is way imbalanced right now. And people would rather live a material life or have, so to speak, at the cost of living a spiritual one. Now we'll see that swinging the other way. That's a good thing. And it's not for everybody all the time that everybody is living an enlightened life. But the amount of enlightenment is so much greater that the country as a general state could be declared enlightened. And that's a big deal. Tremendous. Now you might say, okay, well then what about things like religion? You know, is there going to be like one religion? And I would suggest no, I don't think so. In an enlightened country, I think the principles that I call ageless wisdom may apply to various different ways of worshiping and having communication with God. Yet, those religions may be quite different and unique from each other. The main thing is that the principles of truth and wisdom, love, and people being treated equally under laws, and that sort of thing, would be even much greater than in places like the United States today, where it may be that that's the highest level that could be found in the world, at least for any larger groups of people. And so this is a different paradigm, because our enlightened future country is beautiful, and its beauty is pretty much everywhere. Wow, sounds like a pretty good place. I'm ready to go. You know, sign me up. Okay, what about things like capitalism, competition among business? I mean, will people, because it's an enlightened country, no longer compete for people's business, and will there not be a impetus to excel because of the ability to make a better mousetrap, so to speak? And here's the answer to that, in that people will still have not only open markets, but there'll be a surge towards enhanced freedom with less government changing and controlling that which people do in terms of what we call business models or exchange of goods and services. And the exchange of goods and services may have both a capitalistic front to them, because there may be some open competition for one service or another, but it may also be mitigated by what's needed by others. And in some circumstances, people may choose to even charge less to some people because they need it more. A very, very different idea, if you think about it. Not communism. Not even socialism, not even close. But a system of capitalism that has within it questions and answers about charity and about wise giving and a self-selective model that eliminates a lot of waste and excesses for people who, for reasons usually of ethical and spiritual deprivation, they do not seek the true spiritual parts of existence, and they've become overly attached to material things as a compensatory mechanism. And so this is a cure for that, because people will seek to have a more spiritual balance to all the form things that they have. And they would consider it starting to border on or even becoming ugly if something is taking up a lot of space and removing the natural ways that people can live by just being a material form that they want to have. This is a fascinating idea. It has a lot of possibilities. Let's go through an example of this. Let's say that you're fairly wealthy, you've made a lot of money, you've been a great capitalist, so to speak. Still pay some taxes, of course, but it's not that bad these days because we're in a different mode. But still, the interesting thing is that the value to something is determined not just by how much somebody will pay for it, but how much you get out of receiving goods and services and money for it, and or money for it, versus how much you also get out of it by giving it to people who can only afford something less than what you are offering, than what you are offering. Yet you still may choose to do that because it benefits others in a much greater way than you prefer. That's a totally different slant on the system, where charity and givingness and love become part of a capitalistic model. It is not communism, not even close. It's not socialism. It's basically virtue or light and form being part of the model that we call capitalism. And this model that I'm suggesting would be part of life in the enlightened future country. Oh, well, that doesn't sound too bad, does it? I don't think it does either. And then some people will say, well, how will that affect the limited goods and services idea that so dominates most capital systems? And the answer is that it doesn't. There's still the same number of goods and services. It's just that they are valued differently based upon who needs the goods and service and how much money they have to pay for it. And it allows spirit to enter into the picture much more strongly in balancing out the material side. Most people just sell things for the most amount of dollars they can get. But in this case, they may also start seriously considering how much do they get in giving it to others in terms of consciousness and closer love with their creator and co-creator and closer connection with those who are also more like themselves in giving readily rather than just trying to find the best way to get more money for something. A very different plan, one that I'm not sure of has sustained in any way, in any place in our country. It's certainly not based upon just giving people what they need. It's based upon sometimes finding it more important and valuable to give to one person than to another. And that, then therefore, it's the same as saying you charge more for some things for some people than others. Some people, in your mind, may be more deserving. Very fascinating idea. It's the unfortunate element of capitalism that people keep other people at a distance when negotiating for purchase and trying to buy goods and services. And that's the problem. I'm suggesting the exact opposite. Instead of being just concerned about the money, you're also concerned about how good it affects whatever the other person or people are doing. And that's a major part of your figuring out what you want for something. Interesting ideas. Oh, yeah, I know. Okay, let's move on. And I think I didn't really cover education as well as I'd like. So let me go, before we go too far into the show, let me mention more about education. Education would be a place of challenging ideas. People hear the ideas of others and discuss and openly critique those ideas to find the benefits and the costs and damages of the ideas to each other and for each other. They also seek to find solutions for things that are damaging and problematic, that have some toxic elements to the life of others. And so all this is part of our enlightened future country, and it doesn't stop at any particular age. You, of course, know that in most circumstances, people go to school a limited period of time, and then they're considered educated. And for the majority, they just pretty much stop. Some continue a little bit into adulthood and past, say, college levels of learning. But it isn't like what I'm suggesting. I'm suggesting that people continue to challenge the ideas that they're living by and continue to become more and more educated forever. In other words, you don't say, oh, I'm done with school. No, you're done with something you took in school, but you're not done with school, because school is a place where people can grow in their intellect and knowledge. And interestingly, the school eventually that I'm thinking of would become maybe a school around the school and would have many opportunities for people to challenge their ideas by being in the company of many other people with different ideas. And they would be able to confront each other to determine how strong the ideas are, while at the same time not having to, strangely, be as competitive as most schools are today, because it isn't so much about knowledge or the acquisition of knowledge as it would be in terms of education, in terms of being able to apply it so that it is of help to others in numerous other ways and create some level of beauty in ourselves and others. This would be a real departure from the present model of you go to school, you learn something, and you're done. Yeah. Not that way at all. Actually, it's a living model that the whole society could become involved in. And the vast majority of people would probably be in school forever in some respects. They would also need, in my school, to have to teach some. That as they became more proficient into things that were easier for them to have done or learned, that eventually they have to teach to the other folks, whoever they might be. Not the folks who have the same exact whatever. This is for a variance in ideas and a variance in the approaches that people are going to have with each other. I mean, this is a place where schools would become a place where people not only find solutions for issues, but think of problems that don't yet exist, but might, and also are continually helping others to think better and better through the process that I'm explaining. Grades would be kind of a silly idea, and for the most part, not very relevant. But what would become relevant is how much can a person co-create with God, and how much can they be an expression of new ways of living and new answers to life. Wow. Very interesting stuff. Okay, so we'll move on from education. I think at this point I'll give you all a little bit of a break. I'll tell you a bit about Vygotsky Jezik, if you're not familiar with it. It is an analgesic that helps get rid of most kinds of pain for most people. It works better for people who are usually living a healthier lifestyle simply because it's composed of herbs, natural ingredients. And these herbal ingredients are put together so that they can move negative qi, energy that isn't moving properly, is stuck too much in one place and not enough in another, and it's just not moving around the body in any balanced way, when that would be a positive qi if it did. And this negative qi can lead to a lot of pain and to other things like diseases and bad things. And the 5-Chi Jesus, it gets it moving. And once it's moving, it can rebalance itself. And eventually, over weeks, months of time, you can see chronic diseases actually being somewhat helped by a process in which the energies are balancing within the body. Yeah. So, 5-Chi Jesus is a analgesic first, but it also balances the chi energy in the body. It was designed to do that. And it does so with effortlessness. I love that part. It doesn't require from itself a huge amount of change in the person. They can take the stuff and just feel better. It does require a lot more of the tablets in the beginning than it does even a couple of days later. The beginning, there's so much inertia in the energy, it doesn't want to move. And so if you don't take enough of the Jizik, you won't feel much. You know it's right by its own feel. If 9 tablets aren't enough, maybe you take 11 and there you go. Or if 8 tablets was a little bit too much because you got the energy to move too quickly, you get some side effects from that, then you reduce the amount that you're taking. It's all plain and simple common sense. And you can use this stuff for most kinds of pains very effectively. And how many times have you said to yourself, gee, I just wish there was something I could take for this or that pain? And everything has so many drawbacks. It's a narcotic. You get addicted. Or it only lasts a short time. Or it really doesn't effectively deal with all the elements of the pain, only some. Or it makes you very sleepy and tired and kind of punchy. These are fairly negative things. And 5-Chi Jizik doesn't do those things. 5-Chi Jizik is like the magic, you can call it, non-drug. Not a drug. It's a dietary supplement because it comes from food. It comes from herbs. And it's really cool because we make it from some of the best ones out there, and then we concentrate them in unique ways that other people are not doing. And we end up with very, very powerful, but with very few side effects, if any, of an analgesic that's made out of herbs. Wow, that's cool. I think it is. I really do. I've used this stuff a lot, and it really works. It works on me. It'll work on most people, but some people may not because their energies aren't that. It was designed for most people, but not for everybody. Yeah, make something works usually for everybody because then it defeats the purpose because it's too generalized and it just doesn't deal much with what the real problem is. This stuff is a balance, and it works real good on things that you would expect it to. It also can solve more chronic problems that, you know, the things that people say are diseases, I just call them chronic energy problems. Arthritis is an example, or there's many others. And amazingly, this stuff can be used for those kinds of things, but in a different model. And we're not treating or curing any disease. We're just moving the energy in ways that produces wellness. That's all. It's just wellness, being well, is a part of living your life so that the energy is moving freely in your body. Some of it even has to do with feng shui, even beyond just taking these herbs. Feng shui effects. If you have bad feng shui in the environment, you're going to probably enhance the amount of pain you feel from things, and ultimately diseases may pop up that you weren't expecting. So Jizik is really it's like the panacea. And when you take it, the pain just goes away. You don't feel drugged. You don't feel like, oh, God, I don't know what I took. Oh, my God. None of that. Where do you get it from? Well, you go to buyjizik.com. Makes sense. Buyjizik.com. And you can order right there. For sure. Buyjizik.com. Also, if you want to order it over the telephone, you can call area code 602-431-5762. Whoever answers the phone, you say, hey, I want to get some of that 5-Chi Jizik. And they can hook you up with that stuff. Now, it comes in tablets. And there's a 100-tablet bottle. It's more, neither one are cheap, but it's more affordable per pill. Or if you just want to try this stuff for one of the travel size, there's a 30-tablet bottle. And that 30-tablet bottle is like $20. The big 100-tablet bottle is like, let's see, that's like $50. So there's a lot more to pay for the bigger bottle, which you, if you go cost per tablet, it's better to go. And this stuff is just absolutely amazing. But remember, the reason it is so expensive is because it's a living thing. It's that we keep not making chemicals in our basements and stuff. You gotta, and then we take it and we concentrate it into super extracts, we'll call it. But we don't use any gas or hot water or terrible things that are done to plants. This is all more of a much more natural but very expensive and slow process. And we end up with some really great, great herbs. Okay, so let's move on and talk about life in an enlightened and future country, if you're just tuning in. Even if you're not, I'll remind you. And so we've got a country now that's kind of being evolved, we'll say, or developed, that is becoming somewhat different from all the other countries on Earth, including the United States. Some of the other things I would suggest that would be more common in an enlightened future country is that country would not have a major crime problem. And you could say, well, why not? Well, crime is based mostly on a lack of spiritual development in the person and an excessive desire and expression of life as being material. Well, this country is already enlightened to the point where that's very, much more balanced. And when you balance them, crime goes way down because people now are seeking something different than just the material form of things. They want to be creative and expressive material forms and at the same time receive the same from others, but only under the basis that it fits in with their model of making themselves and the world around them more beautiful, and it has a completed ideation of what it means to be both free and loving and wise without there being conflict. There is no, like, oh, I have to give up this or that because I want to do this. No, it's just everything smoothly fits together in this world. And it's a much kinder, gentler, more loving place to live. And crime just is almost non-existent. There still will be slight amounts of it, usually from people who are undeveloped or have some psychological issues. But most people are not going to have that. And so this is a place where maybe, well, I'm ready to sign up. I'll see you. I'll go. But you see, it's a place where the opportunity is there to be something so much greater than any place on Earth today. What it's really selling is opportunity. Opportunity to be more spiritual, more one with God. Yes, to have material form, even more than they used to have, but without there being a commitment to living a life of gross materialism, but rather a commitment to living a life of balance, of beauty, of a stewardship in environmental terms, of attempting to bring out in the world a way of projecting a part of yourself without it being something that you restrict or expand on or whatever in terms of the superficial nature of themselves. So this is a really different, again, model for how people might live and choose to exist in this new extended future country, enlightened future country. And so what else? It would be the next obvious, we'll say, side to life in our enlightened country. Well, if we take a look at how people handle the truth and how they seek their life to be a model that expresses in it the ability to determine truth and to create love wisdom in co-creation with others. This country would be heads over heels ahead, because in almost every way that people fail to do those things, it almost always is because they're in illusion. And the sense of illusion would be lifted from the minds of most people, from their senses and thoughts. And they would be free to live a life in which the most unusual and potentially greater experiences of life are brought out by the individuals together. And the planet would turn into this incredible, really formidable, beautiful place. That's amazing. It could affect the whole world to have an enlightened future country, because that country, in every way it interacts with all others, it's having some beneficial way of affecting those other countries. Not that it's going to change the whole world overnight, but it's going to have a pretty impactful future. And that'd be a cool thing, if you think about it. Really cool thing. And now I want to get into some details that are more distinct. One of the things I would think is that it would be pretty interesting to have like seven major, we'll call them provinces, but set up along the guidelines of the expression of the seven different ways of God expressing itself, with all of them interrelated and trying to help each other, but still specializing in one of the seven ways. And even if it's a big enough place, you might have seven sub-places of each one of the possible ways that can be expressed. So you would really have 49, sometimes, different kinds of categories of where people might focus their life. And the way of living would be somewhat different based upon where they choose to live. But it would still be cohesively the same country, just with a little more emphasis of one way or another, because people have a right to make choices, and they will. And so this frees people then from the torture, the terribleness of being caught in a place where they have to obey ridiculously stupid laws, where their rights and the rights of other people they know are destroyed, and where beauty is lacking almost everywhere, where there's virtually nothing but, we'll call it, ugliness that people would become faced with. Now, this is a great idea, this country, because the 49 now could be both a political system. It could also help people to define who and what their life is and how they interrelate with it. And they may choose to live in certain places more than others. But again, each is a creative expression of a part of God, in a way that life tends to grow more in that way than in other ways. Wow. All that going on in one country. Sign me up. I'm ready to go. I really am. I mean, this sounds like, you know, wow. What a cool place to hang out. All right. What else? What about trade? How does our country enact a system of trade that is based upon enlightenment and a kind of, we'll say, win-win situation for all the countries and other parts of the country, the world, I should say, that it tends to trade with? So the answer would be that it's no different than the capitalistic modifications that I suggested for within the society, that beyond just a question of price or how much time is involved or some of the form issues that are so common in the present day, beyond that, we would be concerned about wanting to trade with countries that are more spiritual, that are less selfish, that don't have very much of the more negative elements to the way that they choose to give or receive from others. This would immediately have a dramatic change in the trading policies. So we, as an example, this in the enlightened future country, it would be determined that we would seek out the trade with those who are trying to do the most amount of good for their people, rather than those who have the cheapest products or some other excuse. This would then lead to a more virtuous country and eventually a world, because we would be moving towards a truly what some people call the ideal of free enterprise, or free construction of parts of all the different elements of the nastier side of capitalism. And so here we would have a model, a new model to go on, on how we trade even with other countries. Especially, and this is interesting, those that have the least amount of compassion in their model existing might be significantly turned around by this system, simply because the exchange of trade would be so so beneficial to deal with others who have similar connections to how they see and express themselves with what they call their creator. It doesn't have to be the same creator here, but and yet some may just do it for a few minutes and say, well, that's it, I'm done. Let me know next time blank is in town or something. And you see, this this problem that we have about trade is unfortunate, because we do not do what is in our own best interest, much less the best interest of other countries that we do any trading with. I was hoping to eliminate some of the mistakes that have prevented the last year from this sort of thing becoming a challenge to not just a question of free markets, because free markets are okay, but they're not really what I'm talking about. What I'm saying is that you would have a society in which people want to trade with others, because they have interest in understanding others, they have interest in helping others, they have interest in being helped themselves, and they relish in the idea of trade with others for the mutual benefit of the others and themselves, as well as an expansion of the whole system to places where there isn't this kind of system. It may not even be free trade of any sort. Wow. So that's one of the things that I see it becoming as a new model, possibly, for our enlightened future country. What about security and the need to protect oneself? Well, you know, a lot of people say, well, why don't we just all wear peace shirts and say we're not going to do anything? The problem with that is you're still going to have some countries that are pretty hostile. Maybe you want to come in and take all your stuff, enslave people, and do bad things to people. So what are you going to do? Well, here's an interesting point. How about investing in new technologies that are non-lethal, but just as effective in debilitating people from being aggressive onto us? Sort of a more defensive relative position, but I'm not suggesting we just only defend ourselves. I'm saying that we have the right to be offensive on the offense when we absolutely feel threatened and believe we are. And this is the only way we can march or push people back from being overly aggressive and trying to take our stuff and destroy our way of life, etc. I think that the safest way for someone to be secure is to invent the most effective non-lethal weapons, because they're more likely to be used appropriately and effectively on others. The thing about lethal weapons is they are mostly used inappropriately and ineffectively in too many circumstances. So it isn't really a question of whether it's lethal or not lethal, it's a question of what works. And the non-lethal weapons could be just as effective, but they would have to be a different technology than present ones we have. Just imagine if you could knock everybody out for 3 or 4 days that was trying to attack you or do some other harmful thing to you. And all you have to do is push a button and they all just, you know, kind of go to sleep for 3 days. Well, if that were true, and if you could make such a weapon, only a few people would be significantly hurt. Maybe if they were flying in a commercial plane, it could be dangerous. But the point is that most people would be saved from being destroyed by some kind of atomic or nuclear weapon or poison this or that or whatever. And we would have a much more intact world in which, wow, fewer people would die and the people that were hostile could easily be dealt with much more so than if they were just being shot at. And it gives us a whole range of options. You can still have lethal weapons, especially if others are attempting to use them on you, because of the mutual assured destruction elements of that thinking. But for the most part, the whole idea of it would be to resolve conflicts through reason rather than some kind of emotional trauma, traumatic war. That doesn't seem to do much of anything for anybody these days or any time in the future. So, okay, so we have non-lethal weapons that are extremely effective. Then what else would I suggest? Well, one of the things that's a security problem that most people don't realize it's such a security problem is that when people want your land or the things that you own, etc., and they're coveting to have those things, usually what they really want is something other than that. I'm not saying all the time this is true, but usually what they really want is they want to control and they want to have some element of, making or changing the society to a specific philosophical point of view and means and methodologies, etc. So it isn't always, and as a matter of fact, it's usually the material things are secondary compared to the desire for control over others and the wickedness of that. That's why most of these things are really more evil than not. And we can change that. You can change that by having significant level of defense that, again, applies the rationale that you do have a right to be defensive about anything, but you can at the same time fight and destroy, if you need to, others who absolutely want to destroy your way of life. And you can't always use non-lethal things because unless you can arrest and incarcerate the folks, they can come back many times and do it again. So you have to have some other alternatives. And one of them might be to capture people using non-lethal methods and put them in places where they absolutely can't get out of, but they still have the ability to create their own society. And now they have to live in a competition with others who are trying to be just as negative and evil as they are. It's kind of like a way to cure people, you might say, of being objectively evil and or just very, very criminal-minded and destructive. So we're trying to reprogram people, maybe sometimes just through our actions, but nonetheless, something that is needed and sorely so these days. It's not so simple as we might think. This is another area that could go on for hours about in terms of the security system of a country, etc. But hopefully this gives us some ideas to think about of how we can make the changes to make an enlightened future country into something really unique and wonderful. Is it true that an enlightened future country would be coveted and people would try to destroy it? Yes, I think in the present world we have to be somewhat realistic about that possibility. And therefore it has to have strong defenses. But those defenses do not have to have the same criteria in their use that they do at the present time in most countries. If you compare it to the United States, we use big-time lethal stuff. But it also ties our hands because we usually, those kinds of weapons aren't what we use in most of the altercations that we're having. So the weird thing about it is the ultimate solution weapons we have, and they're so destructive, et cetera, we're never going to use. And they're not very effective at changing the problem. Not if you're really gonna, unless you can completely eliminate all the other people. So it is it's not an effective system. It doesn't work very well. It's a good system, a good argument against some of the more egregious weapons that are being used. Okay, so that's just part of the parcel, getting into the security thing, of how an enlightened future country would function very differently. Now, what are some of the other things I'm going to suggest here? If we're going to have a really enlightened future country, well, we need to have a country in which there is no segregated, there is no class, there is no differences between people, because people see each other more as souls than as individual people. So the idea that you're going to seek social justice for the people who have been disadvantaged is nonsense. I mean, that sort of communistic lingo is a bunch of nonsense to begin with, but the point is that it aggravates things like class warfare. And what is class warfare? Well, it's disliking someone for what they have and who they are. And it's the most shallow, the most senseless, the most ridiculously small-minded and evil way of thinking. Well, I don't have to remind you that our present president is a big social justice dude. Yeah, he is. And so are all his friends and the people he brought into the government these days. Big, huge number. And you got to ask yourself this. Wow. Doesn't he get it? No, I don't think so. So there really is a lot on the horizon that's not looking too good by these challenges to our thought. And we can change it. We can make a difference, sure. Everybody can make a difference in each one of these monthly issues, these different issues that take place throughout the world. It's an interesting thing to me that there's so many things wrong with the systems that people keep claiming they want us to change into, and yet no one's addressing the things that's wrong with them. Like, how do you solve problems that deal with people being greedy and selfish by creating class warfare and by destroying the ability for a society to be free and open and creative? How does that work? Let me know when you know. It doesn't work. It creates a very sad system, doesn't it? So our enlightened country has reached a level where these sort of things are no longer an issue, or if they are, they're minor, because they work them out. What about things like how people work? How many hours a week will they work? What do they do, etc.? Well, this is going to sound strange, but I don't think people need to work as long as they tend to, at least in the Western world. The idea that you have to work a real long time because you need a lot of quote-unquote material things and you have to make enough money doesn't hold water for me. I think you have to be creative. If you're creative, then the time you spend doing whatever you're doing is multiplied by your creativity. And so much more is accomplished. So, again, the benefit ratio of life is rewarded for people who are most creative in comparison to those who are least creative. And that, to me, is a system that has great merit to it. I don't want to be punitive to people who aren't being creative. I just don't want to have a totally equal system for people who are either choosing to or for whatever reason are unable to be creative in any significant way. That is a problem. That's a real big problem. And we can change that. So the idea that we can live among ourselves in a world in which everybody has what they need and many people have what they want, but a few people are ridiculously power-hungry and have everything they want, that system is not going to happen. It is a system based upon faulty logic and thought processes. And it is what, unfortunately, people sell to others when they want to get elected or prove that they're better than others. So it's not a true way of life. It's a rather lying way of life. Okay. So then, if we're going to have an enlightened future in our country, what about things like, besides how long they're going to work and how much they're going to work, what about, and whether they're going to be creative, because creativity is more important than the long length. You can make up for time not spent by being much more creative. Then how about also rewarding people for not only being creative, which is a big reward, but you also give people rewards for connecting together and helping other people to solve problems that they may not have the capability of dealing with, or to manufacture things even, or to solve all kinds of issues. Another way of giving, not social justice now. This is, again, based upon the individual deciding to be more like the creator in themselves, and they live a more spiritual life in the process. And this would be promoted in our enlightened future country. This is the future country that would have this sort of lifestyle built into it. And if others wanted to join this country, they would have to give up a tremendous amount of material wealth, if they had it, to do so, so that they could become a member of the country. You can't buy your way in a sense. You give up a certain proportion of what you have, but then in order to stay in, there's no guarantee you would, if you're, quote-unquote, like, immigrating to this place. You would have a tremendous opportunity to become as creative as you might want to be. But if you chose not to be creative, you might be expelled, even though you did do some good things while you lived in the country. Because it's not how much you did do, it's how much you are doing and continuing to do that makes the difference. So you can't just sit around your laurels, because it won't work if you want to become a member of this society. Wow. Pretty cool stuff, I'll tell you. Yeah. Okay, and then let's take in another parameter now of what's going to happen to people who have who are going to live in an enlightened future country. Well, now we get into the thing called spiritual disciples. Some people are going to choose to live their life to become more of a creator beyond all other issues and things they value. They value their consciousness moving ahead and them becoming a part of an expression of God in their life and their soul. Not everybody will be that way. But my guess, in the enlightened future country, it could be a third to 40% of the people will feel like that. And that's a large number, by the way. It's a big, big number, especially if the country is anything over like 1 million people. That's a large number. And how does this affect them, the way things are? Well, it means that the country will grow very quickly in its virtue. And it will be always a challenging place for ways to be of higher service in each person who is a citizen's life. Servants will almost be like a commodity or a means of understanding and appreciating our fellow people. So service is a big deal, huge. And that will make the country a very different place again to live. Because besides just a question of having freedom to be creative, these folks are going to be creative to try to improve the world for everybody else rather than for themselves. Presently, countries that even have the slightest advancement over their consciousness are still way too selfish and way too material for their own good or for the good of the world. Killing yourself and destroying everything about the way you live is not going to solve anything. You've got to have a system in which people have a true desire to help others become as good or greater than they are and to do something about it. You need an action-based society, not one that just sits around and pontificates about how nice it would be if. Instead, this world may not do any of the pontification. They just literally serve, and they serve others in many dramatic and wonderful ways. This is the real meaning of living in an enlightened country. Wow. And each person has some input into what this future country is going to be. And a huge element, let's get into a new area, would be like raising children. Everybody would see all children as the advancement of some soul coming into this world. And we would all work hard to have children raised in ways in which they felt secure but free, and at the same time could invent and create just the most amazing things because they are so developed. And yet, within this free context, people can challenge and can continually try to improve the lives of others around them rather than their own life. Because they're living a life of service. They're living for the benefit of others rather than for the benefit of themselves. Wow. Talk about huge. And so this is the place where raising children is done in a family environment still, but everybody sees that children are like the future of their existence and wants to be of some service and help in how the children of others, besides their own, will turn out in ways that are exemplary and improved upon what has been in the past. That's a dramatic change. Dramatic change. Schools will be optionally attended based upon what they offer, much as many charter schools are today, but far beyond that. And open enrollment. You can go wherever you want to go. If you're a kid, you can say, I don't like the school, I'm going to go somewhere else. You can do that. This is the kind of place that many of us want to live in, right? It's not just a change in the system. It's a change in attitude and love. It's a change in the expression of each for others. It's a place where, because each person is functioning more like a soul, the country itself takes on the nature of being its soul, rather than a group of people who just happen to live it. And maybe some parts of it have a certain ray focus than another. This is way, way different and bigger than that. This is the place where truly, and I mean truly, people can excel to their highest levels, not just of being a person, but of being a soul. Where people identify themselves as souls rather than of being people. And it's again expressed in the way they treat children and add pets into the mix. Why are animals so important about the way we treat them? Well, the ones that are the most advanced are the most advanced members of their own kingdom. And we we should have respect for them just from that one standpoint. Beyond that, they are a part of life. And that part of life is a part of God. It's part of God's growth. And we have to have great respect for it. So our pets become extremely important in how we treat them. Should we treat them like people? Sort of. Let me qualify. Yes, they should be able to advance their problem solving to the highest level that they're capable of doing. And if they have a off time, they can still get back to the place where they can do the most and be the most at any one moment in their life. This is the true land of opportunity, the land that I think the forefathers of founding fathers of the U.S. really eventually hope to see the U.S. end up. I don't know if it will, but nonetheless, our fictitious but still viable, still possible, enlightened future country could fill the bill, could really make it happen. Wouldn't that be something, that has that potential to actually move in that direction? Wow. We're talking like amazing stuff here. Amazing. So children now become part of the system of everybody being concerned about the maximum development. And people, I believe, will be familiar with incarnation, and some will believe in it. And those who do will realize that their future life could very well be dependent upon how they live their life in the present tense. And children will be seen differently. Of course, they're the future adults, but are here because of karmic issues that they are working out from prior lifetimes, as well as new creations they are always so involved in, which is a good thing. Yeah, it's a different place, isn't it? It's a really, really, really different place. Now, let me talk about health and some of the areas of nutrition and related health factors. In an enlightened future country, the concept of health care is also the same as being disciplined in taking care of your bodies. That's in this case, the physical, the etheric part of the physical, the astral, and the mental elements to ourselves. If we're going to take care of these things, maintaining health is going to require that we cherish and love these bodies, but we do so with a kind of detachment, that the bodies are part of us, and they provide, including recent times, expressions of much greater understanding, then we can say, wow, this is a place in which we can all come together and live in ways in which we can incorporate our past and our future in the present. We can start maybe having what was called continuation of consciousness between lifetimes, because the society itself recognizes it, but even more than that, more than recognizing, it supports and establishes that people are going through these challenges because of some of the things they have done in prior existences, well, physically, but also possibly while they're astrally or mentally, too. Stuff. The other thing I predict, and I would say this is going to happen in other societies other than just an enlightened future society in a country, is that we will gain the ability through both consciousness and mechanical methods to travel easily into other realms where people exist after death, what we call it. And we'll be able to visit those places at will, with minimal amounts of damage, because when we do so, we will still be focused out in more service than we might even be while we're physically alive, causing ourselves very little damage to our senses, while we serve others. It's a big deal. Wow. I like that. And will these be machines of sorts? But they may also be the possibility of using just our consciousness to astral travel. Much easier if you could do it than just having a machine. But the point is that this traveling gives us a different perspective of life. Fear of life will go away because we know there is a God, and we also can see the various positions and expressions of God when we travel to possibly other dimensions of time and space, which I don't recommend that people do at the present time unless they are doing so to serve. And unfortunately, most people want to do it just to experience it. Oh, wouldn't it be cool if I could just go? Yeah. And, okay, so our country has this karmic integrity among its inhabitants. And people are starting to grow in continuity of consciousness. So after several generations of this, people actually will remember their prior lives with each other and possibly even probably in the same enlightened country. The reason being they perfected their bodies to the level so they couldn't exist in the other countries that are so dark still. It would be too dangerous for them. Of course, that's what is to be expected as people develop and advance themselves. They reach a point where they can't live in more primitive ways, in primitive societies. And they don't have to, and they won't be born into them. So the world is in this flux. It's in this amazing change that is moving towards what I call an extended future country. And it's kind of like moving at a rate that is minuscule. But at least I see some movement. I don't want you to think this is a negative, frightening show. I'm not saying that. I think we can move into this more prosperous time. Prosperous not just for our material well-being. But when I'm saying prosperous, I'm talking about our spiritual well-being as well. So that's what's coming. We're moving towards a world, and specifically an enlightened future country, of well-beingness. Now, we're getting towards the end of the show, so let's talk about how do we ensure that we can actually get to a country and make a country like this? Well, the first thing is to look at the country that's come closest, and that's the United States. It still has trouble maintaining freedom for its citizens, but way better than any other country has done this. So that's a good thing. That's something so terrible. But, you know, I got to tell you that we are still very primitive, and we being the United States are very primitive in allowing freedom of expression, freedom of anything. There's challenges in every which way. And we don't have the ability for people to peaceably and without trying to hostily take over or prevent other people, to be articulate and express themselves to and address groups of people easily. It's kind of a weird thing, but that's the way we've designed our system. It makes it very difficult. That's one area where capitalism may not work. The insurance of a person to express the minority opinion, even if the minority is a very minuscule issue, is a critical part of the equation. And it's these days it's still missing in certain circumstances, and that's not a good thing. You might see that it's supposed to be there, but it really isn't. So that's unfortunate. We're in a position now where I think the United States may only last a very short period of time longer, or it will prosper enormously and grow to incredibly new heights. But I don't think there's going to be any middle ground. I don't know that it's going to be able to just languish more like Great Britain kind of did, because the world doesn't allow that for that, like happened in Great Britain. We have much more radical kinds of parts, segments of the society that are having all kinds of trouble. And so we have to realize that that's the case. Getting out of ourselves and our ethnocentricity and looking at how we're really part of a whole globe of countries can help a lot. And I suggest that we do that. We encourage everybody else to do that because that's a really big thing, tremendously big thing. So at any rate, I hope it's starting to make some sense here, that life in an enlightened future country is like nothing else we've had. The closest we've come is here in the U.S., and well, it isn't that close, really. And there's some countries that are so far away from this because they have cruel dictators and they strong-arm people that are running everything. And some of them have tyrants, and they have dictators, and they kill people, and they just come and take things away from people. It's just crazy stuff. Crazy, crazy stuff going on. And so this is our challenge. We're challenged now to decide whether we want to live in an enlightened country or we want to destroy ourselves and in the process the country we're in by making it a fully unenlightened one where all things that would be normally free to create and develop itself are hindered and sometimes destroyed from doing so. This is not a good thing. And we have the opportunity now to make a real difference and to move in a pattern, in a way, towards this higher goal. I'm going to tell you right now, you can't get there through socialism. Socialism is a failed system. It can only work in very, very small communities. It won't work on a large scale for a number of reasons. The first being that if you're trying to be a socialist, you're trying to plan, impossibly plan, all the interactions in a society in a central way for people who are not mindless robots, but are creatures of the ability to change and move. And so you're going against God, and it's just not going to work. Socialism is sounds like it's a great system. Everybody gets what they need to get, and the government just makes more stuff for them and everything else. But it doesn't really work. If it worked, that'd be great, but it doesn't. And communism, which is a kind of more extreme level, it doesn't work either, where everybody's going to be the same. You don't just have the government controlling big business, but now you have everybody is flattened to the same level. Well, that doesn't work, because then you supposedly get what you need, but there's not going to ever be enough going around to ever solve that problem for people. Wow, that's a terrible thing. So we don't want to end up in a situation where that's the kind of place that we are facing. And we don't want to live in a society where we aren't free to both express ourselves and to defend ourselves. And defense means defense first against the government. So I'm telling you that even though you may not like guns because they frighten you or they're dangerous, they are needed. And so is other means of protecting oneself. And because we have an aggressive government still based upon its genetic structure, as well as the people, et cetera, that have so many things going on in them that they want to be in control, they want to force other people to do what they want. And the only way you stay free is, unfortunately, to stay and have as much power or more than the folks who want to take it away from you. That's a terrible thing. It really is a rough, rough situation. But the biggest issue about having what some people call Second Amendment rights is that nobody ever addresses them until it's too late. And it's a real problem that the struggle of the few that run things is to disarm and remove all sense of security issues from people, not because they really are so concerned that people might get shot or killed or done this, but because they want to control others and they know if they have a way of fighting back, that's going to be much more difficult. A lot more difficult. So it's part of being free in general. if you can't include it in that part, you're probably never going to be free. You're going to be enslaved. All right, well, we're running out of time for right now. So some of these ideas that I'm picking around here, now, and I didn't want you to think that I'm mandating and saying everybody has to have weapons if they live in this enlightened future country. They may not need them. It's a different story, and it's, again, based upon need. So don't confuse what I said and think that I'm saying the other. Okay, so we're looking at a possibility that a future enlightened country could be on the horizon. And all the things that I mentioned could really take place. They could really happen. So I hope that that has stimulated your imagination and given you something to think about, certainly for the next week. And until then, until next week, this has been Niles McFlower for Why Life Is.